going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply.
Making Sam, taking you to jungle lands. Bengals pride, it fills the air. Every week we're always there. Touchdowns, tackles, all the plays. Bengals roaring every way. Stories, news, and game recaps. Jungle juice, we bridge those gaps. Welcome to the Jungle Juice. Nick and Sam, let's break it loose. Cincinnati, hear our call. Bengals fans, unite us all.
Welcome in to the latest edition of the Jungle Juice podcast. It's a little weird to be here at this time of day, but I'm Sam Gormley. He's Mick Nelson. Mick, how's it going? It's a little weird.
That doing good. I woke up. Bright. Yeah, it is. I'm not used to that.
Mine's bright too.
Yeah, I just woke up like 15 minutes ago. So,
how late were you up?
Like 4.
Why were you up so late?
I was doing Jungle Juice notes.
Until 4 a.m.?
Yeah, and then updating my draft board, because aren't we doing our 7-round mock next Sunday?
We are. We are. Or so, maybe 6, 7. We'll probably add a 7.
I guess 6. Well, yeah.
Just because I think we both are pretty confident that the Bengals are going to make a trade at some point and probably will pick up a 7th-round pick. So maybe we'll throw one in there just for fun. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But on the show today, we're going to touch a little bit on the relocation, Trey Hendrickson stuff. Not a whole lot, just because most of that happened a couple of weeks ago now, and we haven't been on now in, 2 weeks, I guess? We've been off. We will also, though, the main portion of today's show is all about day two of the NFL draft. I think you could make an argument that Friday is maybe the most important day and recent history for the Bengals. They have to nail that round. They have to nail both of those picks, or maybe even a second pick, depending on how it goes on, because both of those guys, I think you need to draft starters and you have to nail that. So I think it'll be interesting to see if we can't find some names that could potentially slot into being those starters for the Bengals. We invite you to follow us on our social media channels. We're Facebook, we're YouTube, we're Twitter. Favorite podcasting platform as well. Give us a 5-star rating. It's the best way for the show to spread. But the Katie Blackburn, you know, she talked, I guess it's been about a week and a half ago. I mean, here's the thing, Nick. And if you haven't seen it, you know, she says, we can leave anytime we want. Guess what? She's not wrong. Like, she, and part of that, I think that comment is being taken a little bit out of context.
Mm-hmm.
Because she then went on to say, we don't want to leave. We want to stay. We like where we are. But we have this little carrot dangling should we want to use it.
Yeah. And let's face it. It's not like the city has been very accommodating for the Bengals for the past 20 years. Honestly, it's been, you know, we haven't seen a lot of improvements in downtown. I mean, yeah, you had the Smale Riverfront created in the past 10 years, but like...
And the banks, you know, you can say...
The banks was developed, so you had a couple of things. But, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think that downtown's starting to be a little more run down than it was probably 10, 20 years ago. We haven't seen a lot of improvements. And yeah, I mean, honestly, the Bengals are probably the biggest economic contributing factor to this city. Like, the city should be bending over backwards for them to stay here. And this is the one thing, well, you know, I know we'll harp on the Brown family being cheap in certain areas. The stadium deal was the most owner advantage stadium deal in the, you know, in the history of the NFL or whatnot. And it should be. Like, I don't know if this city really should have an NFL team, just with how small the city is. Now, the metropolitan area is pretty big, but it's so spaced out compared to other metropolitan areas. But anyways, the city should be bending over backwards to be keeping them there. I think Cincinnati's economy would absolutely fall through the roof if the Bengals were to leave the city.
And then this week, you know, it came out that they're going to be now partnering with the city, asking for $300 million from the state to help fund some of these projects that they're wanting to work on. But yeah, I mean, and I think what we need to do is one of those shows like in June, you know, where there's really not a whole lot going on, late May, early June. I think we need to do like a stadium reloc, like just make this a topic for the show and kind of discuss it a little bit more on all of the aspects of what they need, what, you know, in all of this. Because I think that we could spend the next 45 minutes discussing this. And frankly, we probably don't have the time for that today, because if we start talking about that, then we're going to be here all afternoon, because we've got a lot to get to as far as NFL draft as well.
Yeah. Let me ask you, would you continue to be a fan if this team was not in Cincinnati anymore?
I don't even want to think about that.
It's a very taboo question.
Yeah. Cause I don't think that there's any chance of that happening. Like, I really think that the chance of that happening is so small, because now what they're going to run into is that they get these two-year extensions, pretty much. So really, this decision doesn't need to be made for 10 years.
Yeah.
Which is, they get five of these two-year extensions that get to go on. So really, we're looking at 2036 when this decision will need to be made for the Cincinnati Bengals. And who the heck knows, you know, what this is going to look like in 10 years. And a lot of, I mean, you could think in 10 years, the Bengals could have won two or three Super Bowls because Joe Burrow, they figured it out. Joe Burrow does this. And then at that point, the city's like, yep, here's how much money. Or maybe it crashes and burns and something bad happens. And, you know, we don't know. But I think you're gonna see those 10-year extend, those 2-year extensions moved. And they're probably going to use all of those. And we'll be talking about this again in a decade when we're doing in 10 years, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't see a reason why they wouldn't use up this 10-year extension window, considering how favorable that stadium deal is for the family. Like, I think that's a no-brainer on their part, is to kind of just wait, see, re-up on this extension every couple of years.
The NFL draft begins in less than 2 weeks. I mean, 2 weeks from today, we're going to know who the Bengals take. Chance literally just asked the same question you did, too. Would you be a fan if they relocated?
Probably.
I probably
else would. I'd be a fan of.
Yeah, because I wouldn't be able to just switch.
I don't know. I also don't like the Brown family that much anyways. So I've always made the argument, like, I'd rather just see the Brown family sell. And if that owner relocates the team, I would still be a fan, just because we'd actually have money. But I don't know. I'd probably never be a fan.
I can't imagine it happening. I don't know.
We'll see when Mike Brown's estate tax comes due.
Maybe we'll do a show on that, because you know a lot more about that than I will ever know when it comes to that. Draft, though, we're less than 2 weeks away from knowing. I mean, we're a week and a half from really the round one to where the Bengals are going to be making their selection and one of the biggest picks that they've had in recent history. But they will pick twice. Today's show, we're all going to go into day two. So this is rounds 2 and 3 for the Bengals. I said as we started the show, I think it's as important of a day as the Bengals have had draft-wise in a long time, because they have to nail it, because they're going to be drafting probably two positions and two starters is probably the hope. Now, we're going to be talking about some guys that probably could be classified as more of your backups into that realm, but it is still going to be really important. So they'll pick at 49th and 81, at least is when they're scheduled to pick. Last time the Bengals picked 49th. Do you know this, Mick? You like to be put on the spot here on this.
Joe Mixon?
No. Do you remember a guy by the name of Chris Jenkins Jr.?
Oh, so last year.
Last year, in 2024. Before that was, you ready for a Bengals legend shout out here? Kenny Irons. Stinson.
Oh.
Kenny Irons, remember 2007? Keewon Ratliff in 2004? Eric Thomas in 1987 and Pete Johnson in 1977. So there's at least been some up and downs. Kenny Irons, I don't know how much you can really fault him. I mean, he just had a gruesome knee injury. I think it was on his eighth carry of his first preseason game and just never did anything out. And then the 81st pick, this is wild to me. You know, I just mentioned that the 49th pick has happened five times. The 81st pick has only happened twice in Bengals history, and not since 1983. When they drafted Jimmy Turner, a defensive back from UCLA, and then in 1972,
it's not the same as good old Coach Jim Turner, right?
Do you think
head coach Jim Turner?
We didn't ever talk about that. Maybe we should do an episode where we're who is he coaching?
Is it the Memphis Showboats?
Something like that. Yeah. If you didn't know, former Bengals offensive line coach Jim Turner is now the head coach of a UFL. Is that where? Is that what it is? Or
yeah, I don't know how he got that role. I'm like, that's the craziest thing I could ever think of, is Jim Turner being a head coach, considering how bad of an offensive line coach he was.
Bernard Jackson, defensive back from Washington State in 1972, was some of the other names that have been drafted with the 81st pick for the Bengals. So as far as this goes, I think just to go position by position, first off, quarterback, not going to happen. Not even worth us taking the time to discuss, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I can't imagine that. I have a undrafted quarterback that I think fits. We'll talk about that on Wednesday. We can drop that name in there because I do think an undrafted quarterback is likely, because the Bengals only have two quarterbacks on the roster right now, Burrow and Browning, because Logan Woodside, they didn't re-sign. Now, Logan Woodside, they could probably re-sign, 72 hours before training camp, and he'd probably still be there. But I still think you could see an undrafted guy. But as far as running back goes, I think the percentage of a day two running back, it's not zero, but I don't think it's particularly high. But yeah, I think it's worth discussing, because there have been multiple visits of guys who we would be classifying as day two running backs, which makes me raise that percentage a little bit. I still don't expect it, but we got to talk about it.
Yeah, I think it's definitely within the realm of a possibility that a running back does get selected on day two.
Less than 5%? 5% maybe?
I'd say 10%. Really? I think there's a good chance we do have a running back. At some point in this draft, I don't think it's going to be as late as around 5 or 6, but I think in that rounds 3-4 territory, I think there's a good chance we'd have a running back selected.
So we mentioned the visits, and you got the Ohio State duo that I think we can start with, because they've both taken visits. Starts with Travion Henderson.
Mm-hmm.
He had an outstanding freshman season for Ohio State. 6.8 yards per carry and 15 rushing touchdowns. That'll do. 6.8 yards per carry. The biggest thing with him, though, and it's one of these aspects that we're going to be talking about a lot, is one of the things that the Bengals love, Mick, especially since the Zach Taylor era has begun, is they love team captains.
That's Travion Henderson.
And he is. I know I was reading here, a lot of my notes come from The Athletic's The Beast. And, Ryan Day talked to him about, said, hey, we can add a guy we're going to be talking about here in a couple of minutes, Quinshon Judkins, to this football room. He's really good too. You're really good. Is that okay with you? And he pretty much said, you do what's best for the team, and I'm good with that. That, to me, raises a nice green flag of a guy that the Bengals would probably like with Travion Henderson.
Yeah, I think that the tape really spoke for itself last year. He just looked extremely agile, very quick. The only question I have is Travion Henderson really going to be a good complement to Chase Brown? Because I feel like he has a lot of the same skill set that Chase Brown has. Whereas Quinshon Judkins, who also had a team meeting, player meeting, would be more of that compliment, I think, to Chase Brown.
That's exactly than what I wrote down.
Henderson would be. Quinshon Judkins is more of that north to south runner. He's impressive speed to power, and his ability to be creative with the football has been crazy. So, and also the numbers really speak for themselves. Also with Quinshon, like you said, with Travion Henderson, 1,060 yards rushing, 5.5 yards per attempt, 14 touchdowns, had good grading receiving as well. 79th percentile in receiving grade, 84th percentile in passer rating while targeted. The one thing I did not like was yards after contact numbers. It's 3.04 yards after contact, but still a bruiser, I think, when he was running the football.
I know that people, scouts will describe Quinshon Judkins as a violent runner.
He is.
And that is something that the Bengals can use. Now, the one other, and I don't know that this is a red flag, but at least something worth discussing is that he had 799 touches in college, meaning, you know, with running backs, especially more than any other position in the entire NFL, they have a shelf life. And you're thinking of 800 touches in college, that shelf life, how much longer is it? Now, you do see some of these running backs like Frank Gore and so on who seemingly have an infinite shelf life, but most of these guys, you have that window. That's at least the question with it, with Quinshon Judkins. Now, how much does that matter? I don't know. Chase Brown wasn't necessarily an aspect when it came to that. He had a decent amount of touches when he came out of Illinois. But the Bengals have also gone with running backs that don't. Guy like Chris Evans. Now, that didn't necessarily work out, but it's still something that they at least classify. Paul asks, with the Bengals having Brown and Perine, and when Moss comes back from his neck injury, would it be best to go for an undrafted free agent? The Moss thing is a wild card because I still don't think he's on the team next year.
Yeah, I don't think he is either. And then I don't think Perine's going to keep you from selecting another running back.
To me, a running back, you're almost taking a running back every year. Like, not, you know, maybe not every single year, but
every other year. I would say every other year you're selecting a running back, and we haven't selected a running back in 2 years. Yeah, it's the shelf life. You want to keep four running backs on the roster at all times. So I think by math, with 4 year contracts in the draft, it's every other year for a running back, as it is like pretty much every year for a wide receiver, I would say, unless if you double up, like they did back in 2023. For 2023.
Riley writes in Corey Kiner.
Oh, Jesus.
It begins. I like that he's watching on his YouTube too. He's
on his way back from
he's back now.
Oh, is he back home?
Yes.
Oh, well.
He was a little grouchy that the show was a couple of minutes late today, and I had to explain to him why. I said, calm down. It's okay.
Yeah. Riley, I just woke up. Okay.
He's not surprised by that at all. Dylan Sampson is a running back from Tennessee. To me, though, you mentioned Travion Henderson is probably Chase Brown 2.0. No, probably Dylan Sampson is more of your Chase Brown 2.0, even to maybe a larger extent. I don't see that one happening at all.
No, and also I don't think that I'm kind of worried about Dylan Sampson's frame a little bit. He's really, really, really small. And I don't think he has a lot of power. Now, the speed numbers are incredible. The rushing grading was great. 97th percentile in rushing grade, 72nd in yards after contact at 3.6. So the power numbers aren't terrible.
In the SEC,
but also I feel like he's in a jailbroken offense. It's so hard. You got to kind of grade things on a curve when you have guys from Tennessee, right, that you're looking at because of how weird Josh Heupel's offense is over there. Receiving grade, 64th percentile, 31st percentile in passer rating while targeted. So he's not a great receiving back. He didn't end up testing really well either. 6.60 RAS relative athletic score. Great speed. The explosion numbers were
probably
great.
That's a lot of that goes into his height and his size is taking such a hit on the RAS score.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think he has big play potential, but you already have somebody like Chase Brown who already has big play potential. So I don't see the Bengals taking Dylan Sampson.
to me, the running back that I think might make the most sense, if we're talking, if you're telling me the Bengals
take
a guy,
I hope it's my guy too.
Makes the most sense. If you're telling me the Bengals are selecting a running back on day two, I'm going to the Big Ten, which is weird for me to say.
Oh, let's go. Let's go.
It's so weird for me to say.
I watched this morning and I loved
it. Jordan James. Big Ten running back from Oregon.
Is it really Jordan James? Or
yes.
Is it a
different... Yeah, no, oh. Jordan James was the guy that I was.
Oh, I have I have an entirely different guy.
Oh, I guess are you going to Rutgers?
No, I'm not.
Oh, interesting. Okay, now I'm going to Iowa. Oh, you're going to the local guy, right?
Is Caleb Johnson local?
Yes, he's from Hamilton.
Oh, yeah, well, then, yeah, that makes it even better.
Do you want to talk about the local guy first?
Oh, man. I watched Caleb Johnson's tape, and the player's comp that Trevor Sikkema gave was Todd Gurley, which if you get that out of a day two pick, that would be awesome. And also, he has a lot of Joe Mixon in his tape. Yeah, Caleb Johnson was incredible this year. 1535 yards, 6.4 yards per attempt, 21 rushing touchdowns, caught 22 of 26 passes, 190 receiving yards, 2 touchdowns. Every metric that I think is important for a running back, he excelled in. 89th percentile in rushing grade, 95th percentile in yards after contact, 4.42 yards after contact, 96th percentile in breakaway yardage rate, 56.1%. His home run ability was freaking insane this year. Now, some of it had to deal with that the Iowa offensive line was pretty damn good. A lot of huge holes were opened for Caleb Johnson here. 59th in receiving percentile and receiving grade, 90th percentile in passer rating while targeted with a 125 passer rating. I think he's really physically gifted. He's long. He's physical. I think that he probably needs to work on his receiving game a little bit. That might be keeping him from being a three down back. But if we're talking about a guy that could be a compliment to Chase Brown, I think Caleb Johnson really fits that mold.
I didn't put Caleb Johnson on my list just because I don't know if it'll be there in round two.
You don't think he'll be there in round two?
I know, at least, you know, Dane Brugler has him rated as like one of the, let's see here, from The Athletic. He has him ranked as his, let's see what it is, his, okay, 44 overall. His running back 3 has him. So he's very high on Caleb Johnson. He uses DeMarco Murray to describe him, which another solid.
So on the consensus board, he's number 57.
Interesting. So Dane Brugler very high on him.
Yes. When it came to that. And Dane Brugler is very, very good football mind. So it makes sense why he'd be high on him, because yes. I'm really high on him.
Well, I mean, are you comparing yourself to Dane Brugler? I want to go to Jordan James here because I think he's a third round guy that I think the Bengals could potentially be looking at out of Oregon. To me, he's a power runner, which is how he's described. Not a big play guy. Like this statistic here is honestly wild. He ranked 10th in the FBS last season in carries of 10 yards or more, but 173rd in carries of 20 or more. Meaning that he will get you his 10 plus, but he's not necessarily going to be your big play guy. But to me, the Bengals don't need that from another running back. They just need a guy who can go out there and, you know, average a decent amount of carry. You know, 5.4 yards a carry last year, second team, all Big Ten, led the team in rushing. A decent enough receiver, but again, that's not something that the Bengals will necessarily need from that aspect. He was one of just 5 FBS backs last season, though, that had 85 or more first downs. But here's the biggest thing with him. And to me, you mentioned Joe Mixon. What was the one thing that fans always said was Joe Mixon's best quality?
Not fumbling the football.
0 career fumbles for Jordan James.
That's
that means something. That means
something. That's a big
deal.
And
again, like we always say, the Bengals like drafting guys who are proven in legitimate conferences. They like proven guys in the SEC, because they know that they're playing future NFL talent for the most part. They like guys in the Big Ten because they're playing future NFL talent. Whereas you might not see them as much go to school like the ACC and maybe even the Big 12 at times, because they're just not quite at the level of the Big Ten and the SEC.
Mm-hmm.
But Jordan James is a guy that I think would make some. And then the other thing, that's one more stat that I wanted to make up. He only has 400 28 career touches. So he has a lot less on the tread.
Yeah. No, I think he'd be a really good early down back. Like you said, the rushing numbers are great. The receiving and pass blocking numbers are not great. Pass blocking grade of a 43.9 last year. That's not really going to get it done. Now you have Chase Brown.
But that's why he's a third round running. That's why he's a third round running.
The receiving numbers actually, now that I say that, aren't that terrible. 86.2 receiving grade, 26 receptions, 207 yards. But yeah, I guess the pass blocking grade is kind of a concern to me, but that's about it. I do like Jordan James quite a bit.
But the pass blocking is why he's a third round running back and not a second round running back, probably.
Yeah, Trevor Sikkema is not very high on him. He has him at number 245 on his, on his draft board.
I love how different they are, because I mean, like, Dane Brugler has him at 77th.
Yeah, where's he on the consensus? He's at number 202 on the consensus board.
Interesting. Interesting. So Brugler is very high on him when it comes to that. I don't know. It is interesting, though. I don't have any other running backs to mention.
I'm looking at my list here, but I don't think I do.
And really, wide receiver?
Oh, can't. What about Scadabo?
I mean, if you want to talk about Scadabo, you can.
I like Scadabo. Everybody likes Scadabo.
Do you just like him just because you like saying his last name?
Yeah, he's also a freaking warrior, dude. Like, he's fucking insane. Oh, well. Got to mark that episode explicit. Yeah, Scadabo had an incredible 2024 with Arizona State. Kind of just came out of nowhere, too. 1,700 yards rushing, 5.8 yards per attempt, 21 rushing touchdowns, 44 receptions, 543 receiving yards, 3 touchdowns. So you get a receiving back as well. 87th percentile in yards after contact. 46th percentile in breakaway yardage, 94th in receiving grade, 94th in pass rating while targeted. He plays the game in a way that people love watching. He's just an extremely tough, do-it-all running back. Arizona State wouldn't have even sniffed the playoff last year and definitely wouldn't have had another showdown with Texas if it weren't for Cam Scadabo on the field, being on the field there. Now, the issue with Cam Scadabo is I don't think he tested at all during this draft combine season
he
or whatever.
He did it pro day. He did it as pro day, but he only did the 40, the 20, and the 10.
And I don't think he even has a relative athletic score out there.
Yeah, because he doesn't have a broad jump or anything like that. So probably even to dump that in. Here, I'll look while you talk.
Cameron Scadabo, running back prospect, RAS, 7.44, which is not as bad as I thought it would be. Did he run a 4.65? Oh, God.
That is what it says. Yes, a 4.65 on okay. And his pro day. So he didn't run at the combine because he had a hamstring injury.
Okay. Well, so that might have affected him a little bit, but we all expected Cam Scadabo's testing numbers to not be that great. His explosion grading was really good, apparently, though. Vertical jump, 9.59 score. Broad jump, 8.55 score out of 10.
Does it worry you, though, that in 2023, he completed only 33% of his passes, 6 of 15, and did throw an interception? Does it worry you? I'm wondering, though, here's what I'm wondering. How did he throw 15 passes? Like, that's a lot.
That offense, whoever the offense coordinator there is a... Is he like the Ben Johnson of college football?
Yeah, I guess they would have been in the Pac-12 then at that point. I don't think I knew, though, where he started his college career. Did you?
No. Where did it?
Sacramento State.
Okay.
Future FBS school. But yeah, Cam Scadabo, he's an interesting guy. He's an interesting guy. There's no question about that. Wide receiver. I really only put down one that, at least to me, I can see the Bengals taking on day two.
I got a few to look at here.
Well, then I'll let you drop one in, and then I'll do mine, and then you can wrap it up there, because I just don't see a day two wide receiver happening unless, like, a Luther Burden drops, you know, and in that case, they just, like, if Luther Burden's there at
I do think a Luther Burden drops. I think Luther Burden does drop in this draft, not to pick number 49, but I think he's probably down to like that early 40s range, honestly.
And that's kind of one of the things. If Luther Burden's there at 49, like, it's going to be tough to say no. Like,
oh, the rest of the league is asking for it.
Because at that point, it's just like, screw it. Let's just score 40. Like, yeah. Because who the hell's going to guard Chase, Higgins, and Burden?
Yeah. Nobody can. That would be insane. Okay.
Drop your first one.
First name, I think I've dropped him plenty of times. And that's Trey Harris, wide receiver out of Ole Miss. Had a really good 2024, 60 receptions, 1,030 yards, 7 touchdowns. Number 5 receiver in receiving grade, 93rd percentile in yards after catch, 7.7, yards after catch, which is pretty good. His drop rate was a little concerning, though, 7.7% drop rate. His testing numbers are really good, 9.18 RAS, elite explosion, good speed. They're projecting him to be a wide receiver 3 type. At least that's what Trevor Sikkema is saying. For teams that like to push the ball down the field, which the Bengals like to do when they can do it, he needs to work on his route tree. I feel like he has a lot of DK Metcalf in his game where his route tree isn't great. It's mostly go balls, curls and slants, I think. So if they can develop his route tree in his NFL career, I think the sky's the limit for the guy. But I do like Trey Harris quite a bit.
One of the things with him is that injury bug has bitten him. A groin injury last year, left knee injury in 2023. But this is, you know, Lane Kiffin described him as saying that he truly prepares like a 10-year NFL vet. Said the guy is all about being a great player and doing whatever it takes. Does that not sound like a Zach Taylor guy?
It does sound like a Zach Taylor guy. Was that the guy on your board or no?
No. My guy would probably be a round 3 pick, I think. And something tells me, I feel like you're going to hate this guy just because I don't know why. I'm going to go to, I guess it is technically the Pac 2. Or what are they, the Mountain West or the, I don't even
you
know.
You're with Kyle Williams?
Kyle Williams. And I feel like really? You're going to hate Kyle Williams. Am I right that you hate Kyle Williams?
I don't have him. Is Dane Brugler just higher on people? I guess this is where the problem of looking at the consensus board as opposed to looking at Dane Brugler is I think this guy's okay. Now he's around the
91.
He's at a number 100 on the consensus board.
Okay, so he's 91 for Dane Brugler. So I'm saying this is a third round guy, maybe even a third round. The Bengals trade back, you know, and pick up a seventh or something.
Yeah,
because I'm looking into finding that slot because that's what the Bengals need. And he has at least some experience in the slot. 5'10", 190, not the biggest guy in the world, but production is there. 70 catches for 1,200 yards and 14 touchdowns last season. 14 touchdowns trailed only a guy by the name of Travis Hunter. You may have heard of him. And a guy, if you don't know, you will know, Jeremiah Smith in touchdowns last year. I mean, Jeremiah Smith's a future top 5 pick. The biggest thing with this, with him, is that apparently NFL scouts rave about this guy's character. Like, they say that he is as A-plus character as character comes. And that means something to Zach Taylor, especially in the wide receiver room when they drafted the opposite of that last year and they got bit on it. And I'm fascinated to see if that is a one-off and the Bengals never go back to a guy with character issues, or at least maybe not to that extreme, and they try to fix that problem this year. But he's fast, you know, ran a 4.440. But the question mark with him is the injury bug. He also has had quite a bit of injuries. You know, he had a hamstring injury at the combine as well. At UNLV, he missed games with injuries and so on with there too. Also does have some returning experience, which you know how I feel about that.
Yeah. 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 It sounds like a good pick there. Here's my thought. I don't know if I want a guy, if we really need a guy that's specifically a slot wide receiver, just because
there is a lot of inside out. Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say, you have Gesicki, who is essentially your slot wide receiver last year. you've been moving Ja'Marr Chase inside the slot a lot more often in recent, pretty much in every year that he's played. So I don't know if I'm necessarily looking at just the slot wide receiver. Now, if there's a guy that plays in the slot that I like a lot, there's you know, that definitely helps.
And Williams, 74% of his snaps were wide, 26% or whatever would be inside. So he does bounce it out a little bit. Now, can you be a 5'11" outside receiver in the NFL?
Yeah.
Or 5'10"? I mean, yeah, I think you can.
If you're fast enough, you can.
And 4'4", I would say, is probably going to get you to that aspect.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I will. Yeah, I've got a decent amount of receiver names, actually. Okay. Jaden Higgins.
T's brother?
Yeah. Just get another Higgins in the receiving core. Jaden Higgins.
He was the guy
really
that
good.
if T. Higgins would have left, the Bengals had to draft him. They just have to.
Yeah. He's tall. He's got good hands. The thing with Jaden Higgins, though, is that I think he has a lot more inside out ability than T actually. He had past 2 years, slot percentage, 28.7%, 29.1% in the slot. So, you know, he's a decent amount of inside out ability. He was the number two receiver in receiving grade last year. 24th percentile in yards after catch, though, so it's not like he's having those explosive numbers in that department, but only a 2.2% drop rate. His testing numbers were really good, 9.87 relative athletic score. Explosion numbers were elite. His speed numbers were good. I think he's a reliable guy as a possession receiver, and really he would be the T. Higgins replacement if T. Higgins didn't end up re-signing and he ended up signing somewhere else. But again, I think he's another guy that, you know, if he's available at pick number 49, I mean, you got to have a serious look at the guy just with how sure-handed the guy is. That's the thing that Joe Burrow loves. His route tree is really is diversified. He was a do-it-all receiver, I think, for this team.
The thing with Jaden Higgins, too, is that, you know, you mentioned he kind of gives you some T. Higgins vibes. The one thing with T. Higgins, though, is he's missed, you know, 4 or 5 games every season, you know, pretty much. So you would love to have somebody to slot in so the offense doesn't necessarily miss a beat.
Yes.
That is something there. And I did see, is Rory a big fan of Jaden Higgins? I saw when you started talking about her, she came over. I thought she wanted to give her take on it. And then she walked back away when clearly. So is she a big Jaden Higgins guy or gal?
I don't know if he's probably going to be available at pick number 49. I think he's starting to kind of skyrocket, but I think he's placed himself in that potentially early day two range.
Is it a red flag that he started his career at Eastern Kentucky, though?
Sam's from there. So my wife, Sam's from there. So no, I don't think it is.
That was more of a inside joke on that was more for Riley, because we've seen how prospects, they kind of drop off when they go to Richmond. So I guess he got out. So maybe that's a green flag.
Is this a dynasty joke that we have?
Yeah, this is 100% just for Riley. Okay. Who's your next receiver?
Jack Besh.
Okay.
Jack Besh, receiver out of TCU. Definitely another kind of possession guy. Let me get his inside out numbers real quick. I did not write those down. But had a really good Senior Bowl. I can't remember.
He's almost entirely outside, is what this says here, at least on Dane Brugler's.
Yeah, he had a 27% of his routes were in the slot last year, actually. And then really, he was a primary slot receiver up until this year. I think that but you didn't see the grading start getting a lot better for him until he started playing outside a lot more, which may have something to do with it. But had a really good Senior Bowl. I can't remember what the story is with him because I don't do my job very well, but I think he was struck with some type of tragedy, right?
Yes, his brother. I'm reading this here.
Passed away, right?
Yes. I'm looking here on this as I'm trying to scan through this, but yes, his brother died tragically with that. I don't know as to what had happened here. I'm trying to find that while you're talking.
Okay, cool. Well,
his brother died in a terrorist attack in New Orleans. That's what it was.
That's what, yeah, okay, that's what I remember.
He was the Princeton receiver.
Oh, I didn't know he was a receiver over at Princeton.
Well, he was a receiver at Princeton.
Okay. Well, so that was a big storyline at the Senior Bowl. I think that because the Senior Bowl was what, maybe a week or two after that happening as well, or maybe, I mean, less than a month, right? So he came out and had a really good Senior Bowl, especially after dealing with a tragedy like that. Had a really good 2024 season, 62 receptions, 1,034 receiving yards, 9 touchdowns, 96 percentile in receiving grade, 61st percentile in yards after catch, and something that Joe Burrow would really like, a 1.6% drop rate, which is pretty good.
Consistency.
He does. He needs. He likes sure-handed guys. You know, and I think that if you get Jack Besh, you're probably moving Jamar Chase to an inside slot receiver role a lot more often than you had in the past. The one thing that Trevor Sikkema doesn't like is his ability against press man. Apparently, he needs to really work on that. Apparently his release hasn't been great in that department, but his sure hands are what makes him a really viable prospect here, because you can't have enough sure-handed guys on your team.
Who's next up for your receivers?
Just run through them real quick. Jalen Royals, wide receiver out of Utah State. Definitely a speedster, I think. He's not great in the agility numbers, I don't think, in the agility department, but definitely a speedster receiver. 91st percentile in receiving grade, 94th percentile in yards after catch. Drop rate wasn't great, 5.2%, 9.23 relative athletic score. So good, solid receiver for Utah State. And that's it. I had Isaiah Bond on here, but I don't really want to talk about him because I'm not a huge fan of Isaiah Bond.
And now with the news that has come out over these past couple of days, too, with the sexual assault arrest and claims, he's not on the Bengals board. I can't imagine that he is.
Man, what's with day two receivers just tanking their draft stock, you know? Kyron Lacy and now Isaiah Bond.
May Kyron Lacy rest in peace, too.
Wait, is he dead?
Yeah, he died overnight.
Kyron Lacy died?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, I didn't see that.
Yeah, he committed suicide last night.
Did he really? Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, that happened.
Okay.
Well, that proves that I just woke up and didn't look at my news feed this morning.
Tight end. I really want to just talk about this guy. I don't think it's going to happen.
I do not have any tight end, so go for it.
Can we just talk about Harold Fannin Jr., though?
I like Harold Fannin Jr.
I love this guy. From Bowling Green.
He's really Mike Gesicki.
Oh, right? He is. And that's literally what I wrote. Is he too much of a Mike Gesicki clone? Is that a bad thing? Question mark. The biggest thing with him is he played safety in high school, transitioned to tight end in college. Last season, though, he caught 117 passes for nearly 1,600 yards. He dominated the MAC, but also did well against, you know, their two Power Four teams. Penn State had 11 catches for 137 yards and a touchdown. Texas A&M, 8 catches, 145 yards and 1 touchdown. I mean, the dude just, he produces.
It's very rare you see a tight end be a team's entire offense.
Harold Fannin Jr. He was so much fun at Bowling Green. I don't think he's a Bengals target. I mean, maybe.
I think he's going to the Chiefs.
Oh, that would be disgusting.
Yeah.
But that would probably make sense. Okay, let's go to the offensive line.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. TNCs apply.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Yeah, I got a few guys here.
This is where, and let's go tackle, and then we'll slot inside to guard, because I'd be stunned if the Bengals don't take a...
I don't have any tackle prospects, so go for
really?
That.
Okay, so you might have a guy that... Are you slotting Donovan Jackson as a guard?
I think Donovan Jackson's going in round one.
Really? Okay. Okay, well, if you want to talk about Donovan Jackson really quick, he's a top 30 visit for the Bengals. Played the majority of his games at left guard in college, but did play 9 games at left tackle. Not necessarily a big guy. He's probably your better... In fact, he's not probably your better. He is a better Cody Ford, as far as he's got some position versatility where he can bounce inside and outside. As far as tackles, I have two that I want to just drop in here. And one I think you mentioned a couple of weeks or maybe a couple of months ago that you liked. For one, Ozzy Tripio or Triplo or however you say his last name from Boston College.
Mm-hmm.
He fits the size definition of a Bengals tackle. 6'8", 316 pounds. He's massive. Interesting factoid about him is his dad, Steve, made the key block that freed up Doug Flutie on that famous Hail Mary that he threw.
Mm-hmm.
So his dad was the offensive lineman that made the key block. Very much position versatility, though, with him. He played every position on the offensive line in his career except for center.
Sounds like he could be a swing tackle, too.
Yes. And he fits that size. Now, there is a red flag, though, with him. And it's maybe, some might even classify it as a major red flag. All of his background is in finances. Oof. Like taxes and so on. Like he wants to do that. That might be a red flag, right?
Well, you know, if the Bengals draft him and he ends up being a bust, we'll take him. We'll hire him out of firm here.
For those that aren't aware, Mick is a finance and accountant. And congratulations, you're done. You're free, right?
Almost.
Charles Grant is the other one.
Oh, I love Charles Grant.
Tackle from William & Mary. Now, here's the one thing with Charles Grant and William & Mary, is that is the alma mater of the Bengals director of college scouting, Mike Potts. So he probably has been familiar with this guy for a long time. I mean, two-time first-team All-American at the FCS level. Here is a wild part with him, too, is he was a finalist for the Walter Payton Award. The Walter Payton Award recognizes the best offensive player at the FCS level. He was the only offensive lineman that was a finalist for that. I mean, that means something. Another thing, team captain. There you go. Check that box. Something that means something for the Bengals and did not miss any games in his career at William & Mary. Check another box. They want guys who they can count on in that. Charles Grant.
Yes. I think they're projecting him to be more of a guard at the NFL level as well, which would fit the team need, I think. The numbers were incredible for him, albeit against FCS competition. But you know what? Who gives a shit, right? Number 3 in pass block grade, number 4 in run block grade. Apparently tested really well, too. He's got really good athleticism. And again, he could be just a really true asset on this team. I think he has some, like you said, he has position versatility as well. Probably would be playing inside a guard, given that his height's not great. He's like 6'4". So I think he's a guy that can plug in.
5.77 RES score, which is, that's
not terrible for an offensive lineman, I don't think.
And that doesn't mean a whole lot for the Bengals, but his 40-yard dash was a 5.09, which is in the 8.62 as far as the RES. He just gets knocked because he's only 6'4", and he only had 19 on his bench, which I don't really know how much that, like, does that matter?
What were the agility numbers?
You, of course, said that right when I closed out of it. The agility numbers, so his shuttle was a 4.95 and his three cone was a 7.88. So his shuttle was a 2.48 on the RAS score and his three cone was a 5.25.
Okay.
On this. He is there. To me, though, guard, there's a guy here that he's a Cincinnati Bengal.
Is it Savanaya?
No.
Okay.
No. Listen, I don't know that I've read about a guy that is more of a Cincinnati Bengal than Tate Ratledge.
Okay.
I mean, for one, two-time All-American at right guard and two-time All-SEC. Right guard, hole for the Bengals. You can circle that. You know, Kirby Smart described him as special as they come because of his leadership. 95% of Georgia's 130 players last season voted him as a team captain. I mean, that's a pretty high percentage. Described as a bully, a football guy, and even as a dirtbag. You're talking about athleticism? a dirtbag on the
9.98 RAS score.
9.96. It is the third highest offensive player in the draft, regardless of position. Offensive player, the third highest in this draft. Trailing only a guy by the name of Pat Conroy. Do you know who Pat Conroy is?
No.
You're not an expert on the fullback from Old Dominion?
No.
And then Landon Parker, a wide receiver from Troy. So he's the third highest RAS score out of anybody. But here's the other thing. I mentioned, what position did I just say he was? He's a right guard. Been a right guard multiple-time starter. Huh. Right guard
at
Georgia.
Has he had a top 30 visit yet?
Not that I'm aware of, but a right guard at Georgia. In 2023, who might have been his right tackle? Huh. Amarius Mims. So you get that relationship already built between a right guard and a right tackle. That doesn't mean nothing. Now, there is a red flag with Tate Ratledge, and that's the injury bug. You know, he's missed 20 games over 4 years with different injuries. But when he plays, he is a two-time All-American at guard.
Yeah.
I mean, he second round, yes, if he's there.
Yeah, I will say the grading's not great either with Tate Ratledge, especially last year. I mean, we're looking in the 74 range of blocking grades in general, 75 in run block, 77 in pass blocking grade. So it's not like the grading's great for him, but also he is going up against SEC competition. He is just that nasty offensive lineman that, and
he's
also
a dirtbag. I love that. Listen, I also got a bullet. I mean, to be a dirtbag. Yeah. I mean,
he also wore number 69. So that's a plus for me. I like Tate Ratledge a lot. I think that he'd be a really good fit on this offensive line. And like you said, that connection he has with Amarius Mims can't be understated. That's a guy. A guy that the Bengals met with who is a day two offensive line, and Jonas Savanaya out of Arizona. Played tackle, I think, while he was at Arizona, but they're projecting him to be a guard. Really good in the pass block department, 92nd percentile, 54th percentile in run block grade. So he's another guy that I think is somebody that can be looked at as well. I didn't really have a whole lot of notes on him yet because, I don't do my job great. But
he played a lot of versatility at UCLA, right guard in 2022, 10 games at right tackle, 3 games at right guard in 2023. And last year, 6 games at right tackle, 5 games at left tackle. He did miss the season finale with an injury. Started 36, though, straight games and was only flagged once last season. He had a holding call against Kansas State.
And the testing numbers were pretty good. 9.12 RAS score, elite speed. The explosion grade was decent. It was good. His size isn't great if they're projecting him to be a tackle. But again, I think he's going to be a guard at the NFL level.
Miles Frazier,
LSU.
Okay. Played right guard primarily last year at LSU. Past two seasons. Played left guard in both tackle positions. He played every game over the last 4 years and has 51 career starts. There you go. You know, he is a stud when he comes to that. Did not allow a sack last year in the SEC. That means a little bit. But to me also is, you know, when you're looking at a scheme fit too, of a guy who is used to playing in a pass-heavy offense, LSU was that. So you can at least fit that in, is that he's used to playing in an aspect like that in Miles Frazier.
Yeah. Sorry. I was,
I don't know what you, I didn't know what you were doing.
I was like, I think I had like a burp coming, but I was trying to get it to go away. The grading numbers weren't great. The pass block was great. His run blocking grade wasn't great. It was only 64.1 last year.
So he fits right in, Mick.
Yeah, it's a perfect fit on this offensive line. But yeah, I think it's all against SEC competition as well. So yeah, where do they have it? Where does Dane Brugler have him on his consensus board? Because I didn't
81.
He's
so on, a third round guy.
On the consensus board, he's at 149.
Really? Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. Marcus Bow is another guy. Bow is how you say it, apparently. You don't say the M. Bow. He's the guy that I was waiting the most to see Dane Brugler, because he's always got the pronunciation guides. It's like because I was saying Mbow, Mbo.
Yeah.
It's just Bow. Like bow and arrow. There's no so, but it's spelled MBOW, but you don't say the M. So Bow. Purdue. 32 starts in college, 18 at right tackle, 14 at right guard. So he's primarily a right side guy. They compare him to, you know, Zach Tom, which
it's not a bad comparison.
No, with that versatility, big red flag with him.
Pass blocking.
Oh, penalties too, okay. Which probably compares into his pass blocking. 7 penalties last season. 5 of those are false starts. Now I'm curious, with 5 false starts, is that's mental? Like you can almost get past that. My hope is, but do you have anything on Bo?
No, I mean, just the pass blocking grades were pretty subpar for him. We're talking 48th percentile in pass block grade, 14th percentile in pass block efficiency. So he was giving up a decent amount of pressures and sacks. Run blocking grade's really good, 94th percentile. So that's really the red flag I have. He's like he's probably like the opposite of Miles Frazier in that department, that he excels in run blocking, but not great in pass blocking department. But also, that Purdue offense last year was so out of sorts that I don't know.
It was
really bad last year. So I don't know if he really could do anything about that. But yeah, I'm surprised he's really being talked as a second round pick right now. I'm not sure if the testing numbers were just off the charts for him or something. And
Brugler has him as a third round pick, 84th on the board.
Okay. Yeah. On the consensus board, he's like in the 60s, I think, which I don't necessarily get. But,
so you're more on the Brugler of a little bit lower on him.
Yes.
Who's your next? You got anybody else?
I don't think I have anybody else in the offensive line.
Wyatt Milam is a guy to at least mention as well.
He's a Huntington, West Virginia native, I believe.
Canova. Is that
yeah.
near?
Yeah, Huntington? That's a Huntington suburb.
Suburb.
I'm not
red
even
flag?
A suburb. Yeah.
Red flag, maybe. That he's from Huntington. I mean, I don't know about that.
I don't agree with that, but
I don't know.
He was supposed to play at Marshall. He was apparently a really good pitcher in baseball.
Let's see here.
He was supposed to play baseball at Marshall and then ended up going to WVU to play football, I believe.
Yeah, it says here that he was a left-handed pitcher and first baseman. He started to draw attention from the diamond. So he had an 80-mile-per-hour fastball and a 78 exit velocity as an eighth grader.
Okay.
That's
pretty good.
That'll do as an eighth grader. Standout baseball player. Many believe that would be his best sport. Doesn't have whether he was recruited or doesn't have any of his baseball stats, as he did play, though, at Spring Valley High School.
Oh, that's where my cousin, you ever meet my cousin Madison? That's where she went.
Potentially. I don't know if I have or not. But he's a guy I know, Tommy, a friend of the show, Tommy Lipscomb. He obviously he is going to talk a lot about Wyatt Milam. Maybe a smidge bias when it comes to that.
All right, the grading was off the charts for Wyatt Milam last year.
He did. Because, I mean, I saw early on that his second round pick was where some people were projecting him to go. A lot of versatility with left and right tackle. My goodness. Bless you. Bless you with that. Tom writes in and says, Quinshon Judkins is a good power back and would be the thunder to chase his lightning. We agree exactly with what you said a little bit earlier, Tom. Agreed. It's literally almost word for word as to what we said. Appreciate the comment.
Milam didn't end up testing too badly either. 7.85 RAS score. Pretty decent, honestly, that for an offensive lineman. Speed numbers were in the okay range. Explosion numbers were good. He's got good size. I don't know if the plan is to kick him inside or if he would be a tackle at the NFL level or not. He's got decent length. He's 6'6", 317 pounds. Primarily played at left tackle. I mean, I wouldn't be against him.
It happens. Let's hop over to the defense because we're going to set a record for the longest show.
I was going to say, if you think we're going to set the record now, like wait until Wednesday.
Yeah.
God, I got so much shit to do. we're going to go through like 30 prospects, I think, on Wednesday.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just looking right now, even if I'm just going on edge rushers, I've got like five listed here or six. And I cut out a bunch of them just because I was like, we're going to be here all night if we continue this.
I think I've got three.
Okay.
Three edge rushers.
We got to go with the Ohio State guys. Just talk about him. Just get him out of the way right off the bat. You've got JT Tuimoloau. There we go. I hope that the Bengals don't draft him, so I have to practice that. That's going to be a little bit hard to say. Edge from Ohio State. Highest ranked recruit to ever sign with the Buckeyes. I'm not sure I've known that. I don't know if I've known that. Battled through injuries, but still played in 55 games of his career. Had 35 straight starts. I think it's safe to say that he had a, I don't know if lackluster career is the right word, but didn't necessarily live up to the hype. And then the playoff run came and he went off during the playoffs. 20 pressures, 10 tackles for a loss, 6.5 sacks, and a forced fumble during that 4-game stretch. That's a season for some edge rushers. And he was incredible during the playoffs and made himself a lot of money during the playoffs.
Dude, that edge rushing duo last year was incredible for Ohio State. And I don't like talking good about Ohio State because I'm not a big fan of them. But
Jack Sawyer, we can throw him in there as well as the other end of that duo.
Yeah. So just on JT Tuimoloau, he had a really good 2024. I think he's better in the run blocking department though, in the run defense department than he is as a pass rusher. 99th percentile in run defensive grade, 81st percentile in run stop rate. And then the pass rush, he was still good. I mean, 15 sacks, 51 pressures, 14 QB hits. A lot of those came in that playoff run, but still 92nd percentile in pressure rate, 9.7%, but only 60th percentile in pass rush win rate. So he's not winning in pass rush as often as you'd like. But when he does, he seems like he's always making a play, which can't be understated.
And I mean, Jack Sawyer, I mean, listen, the Bengals just had their white edge rusher from Ohio State retire. Ohio kid, too. So now we just got to replace him with another one, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he made big plays. I don't know that I'd love
it. Did have a top 30 visit, by the way.
He did. But I don't think that counts as a top 30 visit because it's a local college. So there's some rules when it comes to that the local colleges don't count in the top 30. There's some aspect of that.
Mm-hmm.
So and also it's a double whammy because he's Ohio kid that I think that gives an extra aspect for that. Do you have anything else on Sawyer? Or
I mean, he excelled in almost every metric you kind of care about when you're looking at a draft prospect. 94th percentile in pass rush grade, 94th impressive rate. Yeah, 2-time team captain, right? Or is he a one-timer?
While you're talking.
Yeah, team captain, regardless, at some point in his career at Ohio State. You know the Bengals love that. 92nd percentile in pass rush win rate, 17.6%. That's nothing to sniff at all. 95th percentile in run defense grade, only 41st percentile run stop rate, which, you know, if he's in the 90s and all the other categories, you could be in the 40s and something else. 4-3 defensive end as well, so he fits the scheme. I think that even though his pass rush grades are great, I think that he needs to work, are great. I think he does need to work on his moves. He doesn't have a lot of pass rush moves. I don't know if he'll even be available at pick number 49. There's a good chance there's a team that selects him before then. He's a really good prospect.
Landon Jackson, interesting guy from Arkansas. Two-time team captain after transferring from LSU, almost immediately was voted as a team. In fact, he spent 1 year, after 1 year gets named as a team captain for Arkansas. That's impressive. Two-time team captain. An NFL scout described him as this way. And to me, this sounds like a Bengal guy. I love how he doesn't get obsessed with his own stats. He just wants to win and to impact the game and however he can to win. That sounds like a Bengals kind of guy there. Red flag. Torn his ACL twice and got carted off the field of his last game last year with a neck injury. Now, it was precautionary reasons as to why, but that injury bug is at least something there. But the production, 26.5 career sacks last year, 9.5, or sorry, that's tackled for loss. 16 career sacks, 6.5 sacks each of the last 2 years. Blocked 2 field goals in his career, 2 at Arkansas. He's an interesting prospect in potentially round 2.
Yeah, the only thing I don't know if Landon Jackson would be a great fit for this team is that I don't know if he'd fits the scheme really well for this 4-3 defense that's going to be thrown out there. I think he projects more to be a 3-4 defensive end than he does a 4-3 defensive end, if you get what I'm saying there. He's a little bit bigger, 6'7", 280 pounds. I don't know if he's going to be a great scheme fit. The testing numbers were great. I remember him having a really good combine, 9.88 relative athletic score. The explosion grades were elite. Speed was decent. So, yeah, I think that he's a really good football player. I don't know if he'd be necessarily a great scheme fit for the team.
Nick Scorton.
You think he's available at 49?
He's an interesting, but I think it's worth us talking because, he's such a wild card. Dane Brugler has him 59th on his board. And he's a guy, though, that you've even seen sneak into the back end of the first round because you're betting on the potential. Because I'm not sure I realized he's not only not 21 yet, he doesn't turn 21 until August 25th.
Really?
So for the majority of training camp, he will be 20 years old. Wow. 10 sacks to lead the Big Ten in sacks as a sophomore at Purdue, then transferred to Texas A&M, where Texas A&M, that defensive line just had, they had like 47 guys on that defensive line that I think that's part of the reason why you didn't see much production from them, because they just had too many guys to fill those roles. Sophomore captain, though, at Purdue, and then transferred to Texas A&M. That was to move back home closer into Texas A&M, and his dad was a huge Texas A&M fan. That's the reason why he went there. Good run defender as well, described here as a worker bee, as a defensive lineman, which I kind of like that, to describe that as an edge guy, a worker bee.
I just don't think he's going to be available at pick number 49. He had pretty good year at Texas State A&M last year, 80.1 defensive grade, good in the pass rush department. I don't have a whole lot of notes on him, unfortunately.
Then we can jump into an edge from Ole Miss.
Yes, I do have notes on that guy.
Princely Umanmielen. Umanmielen. Here's just the fact, and I just want to, his poor mother. His name is Princely. His older brother is Prince, and his younger brother is Prince Will. So there's Prince, okay. Princely, and Prince Will. That would throw me off. You want production, though?
Yeah. Let's talk about that.
38 career sacks, including double digits the last 2 years in the SEC. Started at Florida, transferred to Ole Miss. I mean, he produces.
Yeah.
And that's what you need for the Bengals. They need a guy to produce.
Yes. Number two ranked edge rusher in pass rush grade. Number two in pressure rate at 12.4%. Number three in pass rusher win rate at 22.8%. 92nd percentile run defensive grade. 88th percentile run stop grade. Literally, there was not an aspect of his game last year that he didn't excel in, which is huge. RES score was decent. Lead explosion. Good speed. Okay agility. The question is he going to translate more to be a 3-4 edge rusher or a 4-3 edge rusher? Right now, his size speaks 3-4 edge rusher. But also, I think that we're looking to maybe not move to a 3-4 defense, but maybe looking at some undersized edge rushers in this draft.
I think you're going to see some morphing more, where Lou, I think, was very set in his ways. Mm-hmm. Where I think Al Golden might be willing to go hybrid, I guess might be the word to describe that as far as the defense goes. Now, the one question with him is that, you know, he had a moment last season where he had to be restrained from Florida fans. Because we mentioned, you know, he transferred from Florida to Ole Miss during an off-the-field moment last season. Had to be held back, and that led to some questions for the maturity aspect of that. You know, I know I'm reading here, you know, in the Beast from Dane Brugler says that an NFL scout says, I hope he convinces us during the process that his emotional maturity and buy-in are things we don't need to worry about. It's at least an aspect that is worthy of discussion. Do you want to slot inside or do you want to continue outside for edge?
Oh, no, I'm good. I don't know if I have any inside pass rushers on my list here.
Want to keep your personal number private but still stay connected? With Line 2, you can get a second phone line right on your device with a super simple app and no need for another phone. Whether it's for online shopping, dating, or shielding your main number from spam, Line 2 is an easy way to manage it all. Ready for peace of mind without breaking the bank? Call, text, block, and more for only $9.99. Get started with line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in any app store today. Line 2, your second line simplified.
I just want to at least mention a couple names. Darius Alexander is an interesting character.
Out of Toledo.
Out of Toledo. Sixth-year guy from Toledo. Had a really good Senior Bowl. Really good Senior Bowl. I know that they mentioned was one of the standouts. Dane Brugler says that his peak plays are reminiscent of Leonard Williams.
Okay.
That would be pretty decent. I don't expect Alfred Collins to be a guy that the Bengals would look at. But
no, he is he's a versatile guy. He could play at three tech or nose tackle.
Primarily nose at Texas, I know last season. He was the second ranked edge rusher though in the class of 2020. Do you know who he was behind in recruiting wise in 2020 edge rushers in college?
Well, who got Aiden Hutchinson?
Miles Murphy.
Okay.
May have heard of him. This is the thing with Alfred Collins, though. He had a 55-2 tackle to miss tackle rate. If you're in his paws, he's going to bring you down. And played in 64 of 65 games. And then the last one that, and Mick, I still can't believe that this is where we're talking about him. And theoretically, we could even make an argument that we should talk about him on Wednesday. And that's my guy, Deion Walker. I don't think he's a guy for the Bengals, but frankly, you got to talk about your Marshall guy. So I want to talk about my Kentucky guy.
I like Deion Walker, by the way.
Deion Walker is a freak, 6'7", 328. I mean, and I think it even mentioned that, like, you know, in Dane Brugler's breakdown of Deion Walker was those guys just don't like, they don't grow on trees. Like you don't see many 6'7", 328 guys. Two-time team captain at Kentucky. I mean, he was this time last year. They were talking about him. Yeah, him being a slam dunk top 10 pick. Maybe even you could have said top 5. You know, you would have seen maybe in some of those early mock drafts. And throughout the season, it just tanked. Now, the health questions are in there. I know he was developed with a he was diagnosed with a back issue last season. The numbers weren't as great last year, but Kentucky as a whole wasn't great last year. But he has some moments. He just looks incredible.
Yeah.
The question with him, though, is the work ethic.
Yeah. And then another question that at least Trevor Sikkema has over at PFF is that although he is a ginormous man sitting at 350 pounds, he is a very top-heavy guy, which might speak to what the back issues were. He doesn't have a lot of a weight in the lower half, which may make him suspect in terms of the leverage that he can give on your defensive line.
I just can't if you would have told me a year ago that, you know, Dane Brugler would have Deion Walker as his 19th defensive tackle. Like I would never would have believed that. I would have guaranteed that we were talking about him on day one. I would have felt incredibly like I thought, oh, he's a guy that we'd be legitimately talking about the Bengals drafting in the first round. But now he might fall to day three. But if he's there in the fourth round or you know, third round, maybe, depending on how the first two picks go. He might be a lottery ticket, but he could pay off down the run. Linebackers.
I got a couple.
Linebackers. I got two here, including one that if Riley hasn't fallen asleep yet, I know he was wanting to take a nap, is Riley's
Stutzman.
Guy. Danny Stutzman. Yeah, we got to talk about Danny Stutzman. But are you going to go to UCLA first?
No, I am not. I'm looking at a third round.
Okay.
Linebackers. I think Schlesinger probably goes in the second.
He does go in the second, probably before maybe even the Bengals take, but at least to mention him. Carson Schlesinger, a linebacker from UCLA. He does sound like a Bengals guy, though. Started as a walk-on and played himself into a first-team All-American. 136 tackles, eight and a half tackles for a loss of three sacks last year. Special team standout. He was the only player in power forward last year to have 130 tackles. Probably gone, but if he's not, I think the Bengals think very strongly about him at 49 if he's not gone. Jump into your first guy in round three.
Chris Paul Jr., linebacker out of Ole Miss. Had a really good 2024 season. 91st percentile run defensive grade, 96 and run stop rate at 13.4%. 90th percentile in coverage grade, which you'd like to have in a linebacker, 56th percentile in passer rating while targeted, 93.2 passer rating. Thing with Chris Paul Jr., he is a little bit smaller. He's only 6'1", 235 pounds. But honestly, I think that's how linebackers are just more built nowadays that are coming into the draft. So you maybe need to add some mass to his frame there. But his athleticism is really good. Plays with a really good football IQ. I think he'd be a really good fit for this defense as a potential Jermaine Pratt replacement.
Do you know what his nickname is?
No.
Pooh.
Two.
Pooh.
Pooh.
Like Winnie the Pooh.
Okay. Pooh.
Pooh Paul.
Pooh Paul. Okay. Draft him. Pooh Paul.
Knew that would get you. Danny Stutzman. Two-time All-American, over 100 tackles in each of the last three seasons. You want an RAS score? How does 9.62 sound?
Sounds pretty good.
Sounds pretty good to me. Here's something that I like about him. Is he split his NIL money with the walk-ons at Oklahoma so that they felt like that they were a part of the team. That's pretty cool. Like, you know, now how much did he split with them? I don't know. Regardless, even if he gave him $5, that's something, you know, with that. Third round pick, probably, you know, where the Bengals would be looking at him. Not a great coverage guy, though.
Not good. No,
not
looking
great
at it right now.
Yeah, not great at coverage. And that's probably why he's a third round pick.
Yeah.
If not even.
Really good at run defense, though.
Yeah, which the Bengals need. They need more run defenders, but
also
missed
tackling rate's also a little bit of a concern. 12.2% missed tackle rate 2024. 2022 season was really bad. 15% missed tackle
That's,
I don't know how I feel about that.
plays a lot. And plus, I needed to mention him because I think Riley might have smacked us if we didn't at least mention this guy, Danny Stutzman.
Mm-hmm.
Who's your next line? Do you have any other linebackers?
I did have some notes on Barrett Carter, linebacker out of Clemson. Again, another smaller guy, 6'1", 230 pounds. The problem I have with Barrett Carter is it seems like he's gotten worse in every season that he's played at Clemson, still being tabbed as a day two pick. Good in the run defense, 86 percentile run defense grade, 64th in run stop rate at 8.6%. His coverage, a lot like Danny Stutzman, leaved a lot to be desired, a 47.7 coverage grade in 2024. Gave up 131.6 passer rating, gave up 5 touchdowns in coverage. But yeah, that's another guy on my board.
Cornerback. We're getting through these. I've got 5 more names to list between corner and safety.
I've got 2 safeties, no corners.
No corners. I just want to mention at least
3 safeties.
I have 3 safeeties as well. I'm interested if our 3 are the same. Ezaraye Thomas.
Who I think
he might be going
in the first round.
Florida State cornerback. ESPN Plus did an article earlier this week, marked him as the Bengals' best case scenario round 2. And that's why I just wanted to at least drop him in here. Production isn't necessarily there. Only 2 career interceptions, but only had 1 season starting. Allowed 17 catches on 33 targets last year. Benjamin Morrison is the other guy. Cornerback from Notre Dame. Does the Al Golden connection mean anything? We're going to be seeing that at times because there are quite a few defenders, including one that I think we're going to be talking about at the safety room here in just a few moments.
It might be the overwhelming favorite to be the second round pick.
And then maybe a guy that you could be seeing in, you know, day 3 of a linebacker that we'll be talking about on Wednesday as well, seeing how much of the Al Golden effect matters. But Benjamin Morrison, captain, a little bit of the wild card there was 2 hip surgeries over the last 4 years, battled some injuries as well.
Is that what he was injured with?
Correct.
To end 2024?
A hip surgery. It's okay. Second time he's had that. But he was a guy that was even projected as a first round pick for a while, was he not?
Yeah, he was.
So maybe if you could get a first round pick later, maybe. Safeties. I think we got to talk about the guy that we were just mentioning, Xavier Watts.
It's a ball hawk.
He's such an interesting guy because, you know, for one, he was signed as a wide receiver at Notre Dame and then shifted to linebacker and then shifted to safety. I like that versatility of a guy who's willing to do what it takes. 2-time consensus All-American and a 2-time team captain. 13 interceptions in the last 2 years. No other player had double digits in the last 2 years, and he had 13. The production is there, but the athleticism score makes you kind of go, 5.79 RAS score.
Oh, I have a 6.99. Did that get updated, I guess?
I guess it did, because this was as of this morning here that I saw from MathBomb is the RAS score. I like yours a lot more, but I think mine is correct, of a 5.79. He is, though, a guy that I think fits what the Bengals need.
Good ball hawking safety. What Geno Stone was supposed to be. And he's better in run defense.
Well, I mean, it's hard to be much worse.
Yeah.
I mean, let's be real. You could probably get out there and maybe be better than him. Yeah, Xavier Watts, a 5.79 is at least what I'm looking at right now on his RES score. Not a big guy, 5'11". Does that matter as much as a safety? I don't know. Doesn't necessarily grade great in any of the RAS score metrics, except for the 40-yard dash of a 4.59. But he is just a guy that Al Golden likes.
2-time team captain?
Yep. Could be an easy candidate to be a day 2 pick.
Yeah. The tackling rate's a little concerning as well. 12.6% missed tackle rate, and my God, an 18.8%. missed tackle rate in 2023. So you saw some improvement there, but the ball hawking ability is off the charts. 6 interceptions in 2024, 98th percentile in passer rating while targeted, a 30.1 passer rating. 75th percentile in forced incompletion rate, 16%. Good in run defense, 85th percentile. Great in coverage, 91st percentile. I think he's probably the overwhelming favorite at pick number 49.
Next safety is a guy that I think you like a lot out of Penn State, right?
Kevin Winston? Yeah, yes. He's also had a player visit.
Partially torn ACL, caused him to miss the last 14 games of last season. He's probably a guy that, I don't know, you redshirt him this year, but you'd maybe let him sit a year and then play him in 2026.
Yeah. Number three, safety and run defensive grade in 2023. 85th percentile, run stop rate at 5.5%. Really good in coverage as well. 98th percentile in coverage grade, 93rd in forcing completion rate at 20%. Yeah, I mean, if I think he was tabbed to be an early day two, late day one draft pick before this injury. But, you know, I think players could recover a lot better from ACL injuries than they used to be able to. Also, if it's a partially torn, I would assume that he's probably good to go by the time 2024 would roll around.
The last safety on your board, where are you going?
Texas.
Andrew Makuba?
Yep.
That's exactly the same name that I had as well. Freshman All-American at Clemson, transferred to Texas, where he led the team in interceptions. Oh, you're clearing your throat there. There you go. One year starter, free safety. We have. That's what I'm trying to like. We're almost done. The last guy is Andrew Makuba.
Yeah, and it's a lot like the prior two guys we mentioned. There wasn't an aspect of his game that he didn't excel in. 99th percentile in the coverage grade, 97th in forced incompletion rate, 26%. Of passes thrown his way, he forced an incompletion on, which is really high. Number two in pass rating while targeted, a 12.1 pass rating. Again, the five interceptions. And he was good in run defense too. 77th percentile run defensive grade, 82nd in run stop rate. Trevor Sikkema said that Makuba, the best player comp that he could ever think for the guy is Devin McCourty, who is a longtime Patriots safety.
I'd be okay with that.
I'd be okay having a Devin McCourty on my team.
I mean, not a big guy. 5'11", 186. Very fast. You know, he's got good speed for the safety position. 4.45. His 20-yard is a 2.6. Not a very agile guy, though, at least in the testing numbers. In fact, you know, Math Bomb relates him as poor when it comes to that. So his RES score of a 5.12. Look at us go. That was a lot of names here that we just dropped in.
My God.
A lot of names.
Wait for Wednesday, guys.
Yeah, we will have at least a 2-hour limit on that because who knows what will come up. Do you have any, like, guarantee for the second or third round, day two pick, who the Bengals are going to get?
I mean, I would say Xavier Watts in round two if he's available. I don't see the Bengals passing up on him.
See, Tate Ratledge is maybe a guy that I think. See, so much of it depends on how round one goes,
mm-hmm.
and what position the Bengals go. Because if the Bengals go Tyler Booker,
or Gray Zabel
in the first round, then obviously they're not getting Ratledge in the second. Then you're almost guaranteeing yourself to maybe take a guy like.
Uman Mielen.
Yes, from Ole Miss. And I was going to struggle with that name an hour and a half ago, but now that we're almost an hour and a half into the show, I was definitely going to be struggling with it. We had some difficult names in this draft. Okay, let's touch base on what the next couple of weeks are going to look like for us. On Wednesday, we're going to be back to 7 o'clock. We are going to talk day three. This is for if you are a true draft nerd. Join us. Like we're gonna dive into some of the names that you will get to know over these next couple of days. A week from today, we'll be back in the evening, right, for a Bengals mock draft.
Yep.
We're gonna do our own mock draft. And then on the Wednesday before the draft, on April 23rd, we're going to do a first round mock. We'll bring on a couple of people that we know. We'll randomly give us teams and we'll project the first round. We had some fun with that last year. And then the Sunday, so 2 weeks from today, April the 27th, will be our draft recap show. Then we're going to take that week off. The first Wednesday in May, we're going to do our mock schedule, which, again, if you don't like to a sillier show, then maybe that one's not for you. But because, I don't know, I had fun with it last year. And hey, we were right on a couple of them, were we not?
Yeah.
I correctly predicted the Panthers game, did I not?
You did.
In fact, I think that would mean that Bengals are headed to Green Bay week two.
It seems to be where they always play Green Bay is week two or week three.
Although the Reds aren't home on week two, so that might be a home game. But still, we'll dive into all of that as it goes along. Any parting thoughts?
No. Wish me luck tonight. I have my first indoor soccer game tonight. So
thankfully you're the goalkeeper, right?
Yes. I need to find a good pair of gloves because I don't like the gloves that I got. Dix did not have a good selection of goalie gloves.
Yeah, because we both know that you're not playing midfield. That's way too much running.
Yeah, and I'm not good at kicking the ball.
So you're just big, so you can
chucking. Yeah, I'm big. I got good hands. See,
I was soccer was probably the one sport that I was actually the best at. And probably could have played in high school if that's one of my one regrets is that I didn't try and play more in high school. Like I probably would have been a defender, but it is what it is. If you want a positive note, the Reds are winning 2-0, going for the sweep against the Pirates. So that's always good news. That'll wrap us up. Or do we just want to keep talking to get us to the hour 30 mark just to say that we did it?
No.
Remember to follow us on our social media channels, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter. We're also on your favorite podcasting platform. Give us a 5-star rating. That way, we'll see you Wednesday, day 3 of the show there. I believe this is our longest show of all time until Wednesday when we'll probably make it be even longer. So until then, Mick, hooday.
Hooday. Thanks for watching.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. TNCs apply.